Station number 15590, Phil Plowright, reel 7.
Mr. Plowright, reel 7. Now, after this bit, I know that you're rather vague about the exact course of events in the sense of time and exact movements. So you wanted to make a sort of general statement of what happened next. So perhaps we could follow that and work it out later.
I can remember German counterattacks. I can remember going out on burial parties, burying the dead. I can remember German prisoners being taken. And this took us right up until the springtime. And as I recall, the Germans collapsed altogether, and there were a lot of prisoners, and we went to guard them in a huge compound because there were incidents there where some of the Afrika Corps were arrogant and very abusive to the sentries all round, and we had trouble and that sort of thing.
But would the German counterattack, would that be the Sedgenin battle?
Yes, possibly.
But up
until
that, you're a bit vague.
Yes, it seems to have disappeared altogether.
No problem. What do you remember? You said you remember the German counterattack. Except it may or may not be Sedgenin. What do you remember of that attack?
Remember whistles blowing and the Germans firing their MG-34s and 42s, I think that's the right description, and rattle of the Schmeisers, that was their equivalent to the Tommy guns. But they always seemed to blow whistles when they were counterattacking, and they often counterattacked and were beaten off, and there were a lot of other happenings from other battalions and, in fact, other divisions. Certainly in the brigade, the battalions in the brigade, they were taking some stick, and so it was a question of hanging on, as I remember it, and picking up what you could.
Do you remember what happened to you in that attack? What positions were you in? Do you remember at all?
No. Not with any great clarity. Remember, we seemed to be fastened down for a long time without a lot of movement. We didn't eat all that well either. We were eating a lot of iron rations.
What were they?
There was chocolate and biscuits. Biscuits and chocolate, mainly.
So it wasn't actually compo rations? It was just
compo used to come up periodically when there was a clear access from B echelon. They brought compo rations up, and we did the best we could with them.
But mostly you were even worse than that. You were down to iron.
On some occasions, yes. Yes,
what
we were.
Biscuits like?
Like dog biscuits. They were awful.
Could you manage them?
Well, I suppose we used to nibble on them and do the best we could with them, and it was a means of passing the time. When we had water and we'd still got rations that had been brought up, we used to make cocoa, and mainly with chocolate, flake the chocolate in the boiling water, which we had a little stove with a methylated spirit tablet, and put your mess tin on it and sit there flaking the chocolate in while it was boiling, and stir it up and drink it. It was a diversion, possibly, that was all. And it rained. We got wet and cold and miserable, and the whole thing was awful. And
you mentioned the burial party. What happened there?
We had to bury the dead, both Germans and our own, and the quartermaster came up with the storeman and a truck from B Echelon, and we had picks, and we dug trenches and put them in and marked the graves. And of course there was the Arabs used to sneak out at night and try to rob the graves, and it was gruesome. They'd rob the corpses of clothes and blankets. We'd often wrap people in blankets, and they'd rob them of the blankets and the clothing. And of course, we had to do it all over again then when we had the opportunity.
Would you mark the German graves? I mean, you mark the graves with... How would you mark the graves?
We didn't mark the Germans, I'm afraid. No, it was...
So they'd just be put in the trench?
Yes, yes.
But how would you mark the British ones?
Well, I didn't personally mark them. I think there was a system of marking, but I don't remember what it was.
So you were more on just digging?
That's right, just clearing the area immediately, because you say the Arabs were coming in all the time and robbing, and if the corpses were lying in the open or in a slit trench or whatever, they just used to rob them and take the weapons as well, if weapons were lying about.
So while you were burying, you'd collect weapons and things like that?
Wherever possible, yes, yes.
You obviously don't remember this piece, this air time, as clearly as the rest we discussed. Was this because it was such a bad time for you?
Very distressing. Just now.
Now, I think we'll shift it on to this business about the POWs now that were taken, you know, during and at the end of the campaign. Your battalion was part of it, was guarding POWs.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about that. There
was a compound, and there were huts in this compound, and the battalion were detailed to post sentries or guards round the outside of the compound, and the Germans kept up a 24-hour non-stop singing and abuse and that sort of thing. And when one lot became tired, they went in and a fresh lot came out. Some of these people spoke very good English, and you could get remarks like, Rommel will come back and get us, and we shall be in England, we shall get you in England, or meet you in England. And they used to sing the German propaganda songs. I heard Lily Marlene there for the first time, being a musician. Butt or something of that sort. They used to just come round and spit, and they were very, very arrogant.
Where exactly was the compound? Do you remember?
No, I don't. We weren't there very long. We moved out as a battalion.
Was there any actual trouble? I mean, did any of the guards give way and sort of attack them all?
Yes, there's one fellow swung his butt against the wire where a chap had got his face on the other side. And I remember that the imprint of the wire was left on this German's face. But this man was, he'd been really harassed with the Germans, abusing him, and he took as much as he could take. He'd actually taken as much as he could manage. That went on for not a long time. I don't remember how long, because we eventually, there were other troops took over. Troops were coming in and people that were arriving, and they took over, and the battalion was being reformed. And we moved out. Not far away from Algiers. I don't remember where it was. We moved into Algeria as a battalion.
Back into Algeria.
Yes. And then we...
Now, had you been rebuilt? Because there were an awful lot of casualties.
Yes, yes. There were fresh people coming all the time.
How did they fit in? I know you had been a fresh person coming from trouble. How did you were a Nottingham and from the Shire first?
Yes.
How did people fit in?
They remarkably well. They were a mixture of another age group that were being mobilised in England.
Younger than yourself, even?
Oh, no. No, they were mostly about the same age and a little bit older, possibly. I think that was relevant to the particular group, registration group, that was being registered in England and called up for active service.
Were they from Nottingham and Chesterfield?
No, not all of them. In fact, very few of them.
Where did they come from?
We had a platoon, not at this particular time, we had a platoon, I think probably talk about that in a later date because it's more relevant.
Okay. Now,
a mixture of various people and in fact different companies and different battalions, where battalions were regrouping and some were, I suppose, they're moving out. For instance, we had people that were being in India join us. Because some of them had the Indian-type boots on with a small toe cap. Instead of the big toe cap that we had on our army boots, they were a different type of boot altogether. And some of them had been regulars. So that's just a cross-sample of some of the people that did join us.
And you say they all settled in fairly well?
Oh, yes, yes. Because by this time the battalion was reforming and we were ready to move out. We didn't know where. In fact, at one stage we thought we were going back to England because we'd heard about the imminent second front. They knew that was going to be starting soon. We didn't know when, but we thought if they were getting ready for a second front, they might, being battle-hardened by now, they'd be sending us back to... But that wasn't so, of course.
Now, what about your interest in music and things? There were a couple of musicians, at least, already in the battalion, had joined during the North Africa, Wally Binch, and things, people like that.
Yes.
Had you met any other musicians at this stage in North Africa?
Yes. Wally Binch, having known him in England and knew that I was there, he was one of my first contacts. He was a Don R for the dispatch rider for the commanding officer. So it wasn't difficult for Wally to get to me. And of course we became, despite the difference in rank, we became great friends because of the common interests that we had. And we started composing songs, and whenever there was a chance for a concert, we had one. We didn't have a piano at that stage, but we did. We had an accordion. And Wally had his banjo, and that was the basis of the first concerts that we had.
So who? There'd be you on accordion?
Yes.
And Wally. Anyone else?
Not musicians, no.
Is it Hallett?
Hallett was an entertainer. He was a partner with Hallett and Binch, they were called. And they did a lot of the lyrics and some of the comic songs that they specialised in.
Was he a singer, then?
No, he was, yes. Yes, he was, but more of a comedy singer rather than a straight singer, or if you like to call it that.
The sort of songs you composed, you'd be doing the music then, would you?
Very often, yes, yes. Wally, of course, played the ukulele banjo, and he had it with him, so even if I wasn't there, they'd got music, they got accompaniment of some kind.
And these concerts, how little were they? That's what I meant to ask you. Were they sort of battalion or company or even just platoon? Or just a group of lads together?
Wally used to have impromptu things, I know, within the platoon. Because he was in headquarter platoon, and they were often miles away from the rifle companies, of which I was a member. And we did get together as a... for a battalion presentation as well, but not so much as we did more of that in Italy later on.
But it had started.
But it had started, yes.
Were the men appreciative, or
Yes, they were. I remember, just to hark back a bit, one of the first things that we did when we arrived in Africa was sing. And we were at Mason Carey, the place that we've since remembered, and we sang. And one of the things that we sang was Bread of Heaven, Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. And we, in fact, had part singers. So I knew that people had been probably close or brought up in the church, because they could sing parts. And we had bass, tenor, and lead. And it was quite good. It passed many a happy hour away just singing. But that went by the board, obviously, in later months. But when we got an accordion and somebody wanted to sing, they would come up and give just sing whatever they wanted. Volunteering to sing, that is.
And you'd accompany them?
As best I could, yes.
Could you play the accordion before you got up there?
No, I couldn't. But I found it quite easy to play. It was easy enough to pick up.
Any other things you were doing during that period, you know, while you were rebuilding? Or after you'd rebuild, really?
No, not at that stage. I think that moves on to the next part. We got an order to be prepared to move out. And we went to a little station in the early hours of the morning, and there were lines of cattle trucks on French railways. And it said on, 40 hommes, 7 chevaux, 40 men or 7 horses. And we were allocated one of these cattle trucks. And in fact, we had to muck them out before we could move in. Straw and all sort of droppings in there. And we moved in. And eventually, we were hooked onto a locomotive, and the journey started. And we went right the way across Africa from where we were, not far from Algiers, because we'd been doing a lot of training in the Atlas Mountains round there. That was a particularly miserable time also, if I may say, because we...
What, the training?
The training.
Why was that? Before we go on to the cattle truck.
Yes.
What was wrong with the training? What were you doing?
It was hot, for one thing. We'd never got enough water to drink. And we had a new commanding officer.
Who was that?
A man called Hefford. And he'd got the idea that to make us efficient, he'd got to kill us. Which was true. We had what we called Jebel bashing. Jebel is the Arabic for hill. And we had to march up these foothills of the Atlas Mountains, quite a long way up among scrub and thorns and what have you. And having got to the top, we'd be firing and dodging about doing exercises. And when that was over, we had to make our way quickly back down to the camp, marching all the time. Absolutely deadbeat when we got back, and no water to drink, and we were very thirsty. There was never enough water, and what there was got tainted by mepocrine. We had this stuff in there to mosquitoes, and it tasted awful. Even the tea that we had made had got the mepocrine in it. We did get some fresh fruit occasionally. We were brought melons. And these were sliced up by the cooks, and we had a slice of melon with our McConaughey's, Irish stew and that sort of thing. There was no leisure time when we weren't actually training. It was scrubbing clothes and ablutions.
Was there a concentration on bull, in this training period? Were you supposed
no.
to keep everything clean?
We had to keep, you had to keep your shirt and that sort of thing, taking showers, and because the mobile showers came and rigged up a mobile unit, mainly to keep the lice at bay. That was a great thing. They used to congregate in the seams of your shirt, under your arms, and they were pretty nasty. It was, in fact, in total, it was a miserable time, the training. I don't think it did any of us any good. Well, in fact, I know it didn't. I know it didn't, because we were thoroughly miserable by the time we got onto these trucks and were moving out.
So you may have been fitter or more militarily efficient, but your morale was worse.
Yes. We were all leaner, there's no doubt about that. We'd reduced to skin and bone, virtually. And we were all very brown, sunburnt, and that sort of thing. But photographs that I had taken on occasion that we did have some photographs taken. We had there's a photograph of the company, our company, taken just about that time. And the men looked very gaunt, very gaunt.
Now, so you got on this train, or rather into this cattle truck, and what was the journey like?
It was horrible. We were then moving up to Bizerta. We didn't know that, where we were going, but we were, in fact, moving up to Bizerta. And we were on this railway, I think, about 3 or 4 days, sleeping and living in this cattle truck. And there were supplies moving up to the area, and when they were coming through, a supply train, the troop train was shunted into various sidings, and these things pushed on. So it was obvious that something urgent was going off because of the preparation. They were moving all the supplies and weapons, and we saw lorries and guns and all sorts of things moving up on these various trucks that periodically we had to pull into the sidings for. There were some humorous
what were they?
Incidents. The train was moving at slow speed, and there were fields of grapes alongside, and blokes were jumping out of the cattle trucks, dashing into the fields and grabbing a handful of brakes and catching the truck up again and jumping on. We were going so slowly. And if it started to pick up speed, they had to dive into a truck further down. There were always hands ready to pull them back in. And when the train stopped on occasions, we'd got rations, dry rations, and the cooks had got, they were on the same train, of course, and they'd got all their cooking gear, and we used to put a brewing of tea and sugar into the mess tin and run up to the locomotive in front, and he would squirt some scalding brown water into it, and we'd stir it up and drink it for tea. The locomotives were French, and the cattle trucks, I say, were French. I reckon they got square wheels as well, because the whole thing was jolting all the time. There was also other things like robbing the American troop trains. We'd pass these carriages and boxers, box vans locked up, padlocked and locked up, and they'd got the American markings on, and one bloke went and blew the lock off the chain and came back with a great big can full of American biscuits, and in this particular can, which was sealed, we had to open it. It was completely sealed. We had to open it with a jackknife, the tin opened part of the jackknife, and there were biscuits and there were jam and one or two nice things in there, and we were on the lookout for these then as a regular thing if ever there's a chance to see them, but I don't think we got them above once. But it was quite a nice interlude. Anyway, we got to somewhere near Bizerta and we marched again and we took up positions in the mountains. They weren't in foothills of mountains, overlooking Bizerta Harbour. And we dug in there. We dug deep trenches and we found out why the first night there was there were preparations in the bay, in the Bizerta Harbour area. There were troop landing craft, LCIs. There was the Aurora, the cruiser Aurora was there. There were flak ships and American stuff, guns and whatnot, being loaded into various areas. And as soon as it got dark, the Germans were attacking it.
And the
air raids, yes. The flak ships were letting loose and the sky was just like Blackpool illuminations. And the flak that fell, the shrapnel that fell, was very dangerous. And that was the reason that we'd had to dig in.
So it wasn't so much from being bombed, it was just
falling shrapnel, yes, from the everything was firing, even the Aurora, they were firing anti-aircraft shells and they killed by shrapnel. During the day, it was comparatively quiet, and we had to go on landing craft exercises. We went on to these LCTs, LCIs, and we were taken out to sea and then landed on the beach, and we had to make a landing on the beach. Had to know where we had to be on the boat, on the infant landing craft infantry, LCI.
What were and like the LCIs?
The front came down and we sat down the sides. But there were also tank landing boats as well. What do they call those? LCVs? Yes. LCVs, vehicle, I think. LCVs. So there were LCIs and LCVs. And we had a few trips on those as well. We also...
What were you doing? I mean, what you were just getting used to being on them, were you?
Yes, yes. And then getting off them.
Would you land in dry? I mean, would you get your feet wet?
No, you'd often get your feet wet, yes. You didn't keep them dry. But if you got them wet, they were soon dry. It was so hot. It was really hot. And sometimes we were able to go down to another part of the beach, further away from it. We used to route march there, strip off and go in the sea, and then route march back. We didn't have bathing costumes or anything. Some went in with nothing on, and others went in with their drawers, cellular, on. And I remember on one occasion, an Arab appeared with a donkey, and he was loaded with grapes. And he pulled up about 200 or 300 yards furthest away from the nearest troops, or the nearest group of troops. And one man wandered over, and there was a bit of palarying, and he came back with holding a bunch of grapes. And others spotted it, and before long the donkey was overturned and the Arab had got no money and grapes are all over the sand. Such was the desperate need to get grapes.